Now, on the Hill. 98FM's Dublin GAA podcast.
This is On The Hill. I'm Stephen Doyle. And as ever, I'm joined on 98FM Sports Dublin GAA podcast by Ger Brennan. How are you, Ger?
Stephen, not too bad. How are you?
I'm great, Jan. I tell you, when the weather's like this around the city,
it's beautiful.
Get you in the mood for the weekend, doesn't it?
We should take this outside.
I hope that's not a threat, Ger.
It was quite threatening, wasn't it? We shall do.
But what a weekend we've got ahead here, because there's so much going on. I suppose in a general sporting term, everybody I'm sure is enjoying Cheltenham and all that kind of jazz. And we've got the club finals on Friday, which we'll be touching on big time in this podcast. And also the Dublin-Kerry match on Saturday, which is really, really hotly anticipated at the moment. So we'll be discussing all that. As I said, we'll preview Dublin's massive Allianz League clash with Kerry. And there's only one outfit we could shine a light on this week in our Dub Club focus, and that is the mighty Kula. So as ever, if you want to email us, you can get us on the hill at 98fm.com. Twitter is at 98fm sport, and I'm at Dub Soul Rebel, and our Facebook is facebook.com/98fm sport. So without any further ado, let's get stuck into Blues in the News.
This is On the Hill, 98FM's Dublin GAA podcast.
Right, Jerry, so as ever, I've pulled out two pieces here this week. The first one, one of our old pals, Conor McKeown, writing in the Evening Herald, and he's done a good little interview with Des Cahill, of course, the former chairman of the Kula GAA club out in Dalkey, but also famous for his RTE sports reporting. One of the greatest sports
and
reporters.
And his dancing, of course, Jerry.
Did you see any of it?
I saw a few bits of it now, yeah.
But, how was he? Was he looking like agile and
He looks nippy? Well. I don't know whether, again, it's the permatan or the makeup before the show begins. No, he looks well. He seems to be enjoying this. I've seen a few of the episodes so far, yeah.
Fair play to him. He's great crack, Des. With a lot of time for him. So look, he's speaking to Conor about his club, Kula, who, as I mentioned there, are in the All-Ireland Club Final. It's a tough game for them. They're taking on the mighty Ballyhale from down in Clare. But incredible stuff, because it is the first Dublin club we've ever seen in an All-Ireland hurling final. So a big, big week for them. And Desi gives a great interview here to Conor. But it was a little piece I picked out at the end, Jerry, because I thought you might be able to relate to it yourself. And he says here, they're still a very young team. That's the extraordinary thing. But that doesn't mean you can get another chance. The fact that they're young and talented doesn't mean you get another go at it, adds Des. It's a golden chance. And he's right there, because there's so many great GAA players. And I remember the AIB, I think, ran a campaign a couple of years ago, you know, naming up a couple of players who won all sorts of stuff with their county, but couldn't get that elusive club medal. You went into the 2008 final with St Vincent's, and Vinnies, as we know, are, you know, the most decorated club in Dublin City, but they hadn't been to a Dublin club final in 25 years. They hadn't been to an All-Ireland club final in 25 years. When you were going into that match, could you relate to what Des was saying there about it's a golden chance and you might never get that opportunity again?
Absolutely, and it's only on reflection that you kind of realise how much of a golden chance it is to make it to an All-Ireland club final. Now, St Vincent's, we didn't win a club championship either during all those years up until 2007. I think one of the biggest advantages that probably Kula have for them, I would say, is losing to Elders the year previous. That kind of hurt that you feel after a defeat like that, you know, it's important that you kind of don't forget it. Yeah, you don't let it take over you, but you kind of use it wisely. But additionally, the confidence that they would have taken from that defeat to know that, you know, as a Dublin hurling club, we're not known to be as prolific in our hurling, whether it's inter-county or whether it's on the club scene. The confidence to know that, you know, we're not far off it. I know Eldert, you know, lost in the Pearsic last year, the very strong club team from Limerick. Kula will know that, yeah, they have a chance here. In a similar fashion, we would have lost to UCD in the 2006 Dublin final. We lost by a point, more or less the last kick of the game. Austin O'Malley, who subsequently joined us then, I think he kicked the winner, 12-11 we lost. That was one of the toughest defeats I ever experienced. And
really, yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, that was nearly your springboard going forward into the 2007, certainly the Dublin campaign. And, you know, once we won the Dublin campaign and we got over Censorstown, we actually nearly lost to them in the first round of Leinster a week a week later after the county final, we drew with him in Parnell Park. You know, it was a quite a distracting week in the lead up to that, having won the county final for the first time in whatever 25 years or so. So we did beat them in the replay in Navan, and it was only after that moment, I think, players as a group, we began to realise, well, do you know what, we have a serious opportunity here. Getting out of Dublin is such a challenge. If you can get out of Dublin, you know, you have a real opportunity to progress far in this particular competition. And then, you know, Mickey Whelan was our manager. Mickey, quite a spiritual guy, and through chatting with him over that particular campaign and even in the years subsequently, he always talked about, he just had a feeling that this was our year, that there was something there for us, that no matter what happened, we were going to win. And I think that belief he had, he just instilled it amongst the rest of the team. But yeah, such a golden opportunity. It was 5 years, I think 6 years of a barren period, I would say, for us then as a club. We lost five starters from the 15 that lined out on St Patrick's Day in 2008. And it just took a good few years for the team to recover. And I guess when Tommy Conroy came back in as manager, you know, we kind of got the show on the road again. We got our house in order, and we began to compete in the latter stages of the Dublin Championship, and we've obviously had a good run today, and winning the Club All-Ireland as well for a second time. Yeah. But like, it's hard, it's a long season, it's a long, long slog, like, you know, and dealing with that big break in between the you know, the provincial final for yeah. Ballyhea and for Coola. And both teams have obviously progressed well in the semi final of the All Ireland series, but yeah, dealing with that break is a big challenge, and I think both teams have kind of dealt with it well so far.
Would Mickey have, you know, and obviously he doesn't want to put unnecessary pressure on you guys going into such a big final, but would he have mentioned the fact that, you know, lads, this is a golden opportunity and you mightn't get here again, so you got to make the most of this one and put in. Was that used as a motivating factor, or would he have maybe tried not to let you think about it that way?
Yeah, that was something he used, but it wasn't the I guess the primary motivator. Yeah. Because he was, again, quite tactical. He was quite contemporary in his approach, which a lot of the managers do. They use a similar methodology, I guess, in terms of focusing on the game plan and the role and performing that role as best as you can, and adapting and evolving on the pitch. But you also need, you know, that's something special, that's something intangible to the naked eye, and that's where the spirit comes in, isn't it? That bit of passion, that yeah. bit of desire. And Mickey was great at kind of, you know, he married both the tactical side of things and the motivational side of things very well together. Something else that happened, Pat Kelly, who was wore number 5 that day for the club from Mayo, his father passed away in the day or two previously, and Pat was such a gent and wonderful person, and a warrior on the field as well. You know, his parents, his father, insisted that he played the club final. And when we saw him lining out and turning up for training, you know, the kick round beforehand, and lining out on St Patrick's Day, you know, you were just inspired to actually play for him. The fact that he's here and his father passing, you know, so there's something greater going on. So we actually had a great start that day against Nemo Rangers.
Yeah,
in 2008.
I remember well, yeah, I was there reporting on it myself. Yeah.
So, I got a bit shaky towards the end. I guess maybe lack of experience of being in those situations. But we held out for a 1-point win. I think Cormac Riley from Meath was the referee that day. But I remember blowing the final whistle. I think it was a bit early for some of the Nemo support, just because the momentum was with them, like, but we kind of dug it out and we hung on. But it's a special moment to be there. Another great memory I have, and you know, I'm sure the Coola guys will look back hopefully fondly for them next week. The lead up to the game, Michael Savage, I wasn't driving at that stage in 2008. Michael Savage, she was coming down and pick me up from my ma's in Doris Estuary, and bring me up to Vincent's or to Parnell or wherever we were meeting before championship games. So on that particular occasion, St Patrick's Day, we came up Doris Estuary, turned right down Griffith Avenue, and we were held up at the where the entrance into Charmont Estate is, you know.
Yeah.
And there was actually a big parade. We didn't even know the parade was on. There was a parade of St Vincent supporters, and Dáil Éireann was kind of leading it on his truck down the hill from the Merino Institute of Education down Phillipsburg Avenue and turn right at Mars and into Croke Park. So we didn't know that was going on because we were just keeping our heads in the sand in the build-up to the game. So we were actually stuck in the traffic there for a few minutes. So it was a ring when the lads say we're actually held up, but we'll be there in a minute. But myself and Mick were just... You know, we are fairly level-headed. We don't get carried away with the fanfare that goes on around sport on occasions. But we said, "Geez, this is pretty cool, isn't it?"
Did you feed off that a little bit?
Absolutely. Yeah, there was something special there, you know. And there was a great, certainly for me, just felt grateful. Just to be in this particular. Situation,
yeah, because you know, the Cool Ultras. they've chartered a dart to bring them from Dalkey up to Connolly Station. They're going to have a parade similar to that one up to Croke Park, which is fantastic. I think it's brilliant. It really, really is good. Yeah. And you know, to think that you guys as well maybe fed off something, like you would hope the Cool Hurlers can do something similar. And just on that as well, Ger, because you've obviously played in big finals at Croker as a Dublin player, and that is obviously fantastic. But I suppose you look around Croke Park and you won't be able to pick out faces that you know or anything like that. But a club final, Patrick's Day, it must be so different because you look up into that crowd of Vincent supporters or the Cooler supporters as it will be on Friday, and to see all those people that you know, family and friends, it's a different kind of final, isn't it? It must be a different kind of atmosphere.
Yeah, it's totally different than, I suppose, just to add, my cousin Sean is in goal for Cooler, and just to wish him well and his family. And my cousins, other cousins, have always been great supporters of me, and I know our family, we've been kind of returning the favour, and all the other cousins have been trying to support him as well, just to wish him well. But when you again, people often ask what's the difference between winning a club All-Ireland and a county All-Ireland, and I suppose the big difference for me was always when you went into a bar after winning with Dublin, there was, you know, the place was packed out, but you didn't really know anyone there.
Yeah.
When you win with the club, you go back to the clubhouse or the local boozer, and you go in and you know everyone there. And in the same fashion, when you do look up to the crowd in Croke Park and All-Ireland, the club All-Ireland final day, you know, chances are you're going to know every two out of every three people there. You're going to recognise them, know who they are, know them by name. Probably recall times where they might have given you a lift to games as a juvenile, or when they coached you, or when they gave out to you to keep them the straight and narrow. So it is a great community event, you know.
Yeah, I have to say, I mentioned there, I was at the report. I think it was actually my first big final I'd done for 98FM, Vincent's against Nemo. And the following year, obviously, Croke's got there as well, and they won. I was thinking, ah, geez, this stuff is easy for the Dublin clubs, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But probably since then, we've competed in most of the All-Ireland club finals.
And yeah, Ballymun had a great run one year. They were unlucky, maybe.
Yeah, Croke's been in the mix as well.
Yeah, Bowden, of course, last year was fantastic.
But I know, because Cross McGlen were really the team to beat in around that time, and 2008 we bet them the semis.
What a match!
Down in Navan, and I think they were looking to win, maybe going for three clubs in a row or something like that.
Yeah.
When we bet them the semis, but then I know Croke's bet them the following year in the All Ireland Club final. I was in watching it.
Yeah.
And I kind of fancied Croke's on that day. But I fancied Cross McGlen on the day, having suffered maybe the defeat the previous year. But Kilmacud just kind of blew them out of the water. They were a lot younger and hungrier.
Yeah.
But I think Dublin Clubs, we've kind of competed well since then, you know. So
definitely. Well, look, we'll have more on Coola later on in the podcast. Jared, just before we leave our media section, I want to mention Billy Keane's piece, which we both had a good read of. And Billy's great. He's a great colour writer and really sets the scene for what's going to be a fantastic match on Saturday between Dublin and Kerry in the Allianz League. And there's one piece here I just picked out because actually the whole opening is brilliant. He says, "The Dubs never bring their own sandwiches and they don't own tea flasks or hip flasks either. The Dubs are spenders. They love the day out. And next weekend, the redistribution of wealth from the cashlands of the East will be spread all over the Vale of Sweet Tralee." Brilliant stuff from Biddy. It's where we are all swimming in cash up here in the capital. But anyway, he mentions after that, Kerry play Dublin next Saturday night in a competition we used to call Only the League. But now Kerry need to show we can beat Dublin. Dublin will try to prove they can win on the road. And when I was reading that, Ger, I just had a quick look at the previous results between Dublin and Kerry over recent times. We know they were the last team to beat Jim Gavin's men by 15 points to 110 in the league on the 1st of March 2015 down in Killarney. Little did we know that would be the last time Dublin would be beaten in a competitive league or championship match. But they've beaten Kerry in the 2015 All-Ireland Final by 12 points to 9, twice in last year's Allianz League, 2-14 to 14 in round 1 and 2-18 to 13 in the final, and again in the All-Ireland Semi-Final, 22 to 2-14. Dublin also beat Kerry in the 2013 and 2011 Championships as well as the 2014, 2013, 2011, 2010 Allianz Leagues. Kerry won the 2012 Allianz League clash. The balance of power really has swung in Dublin's favour, Ger, hasn't it? Mm. How much are, you know, reading Billy's piece there, he, as I said, he really sets the scene. How much are they wanting that win down there in the kingdom, do you think?
Look, Dublin will be looking to win every game that they tug out in. I know when you go through the rest of Billy's piece, he talks about, I suppose he mentions that while Dublin are probably the flagship team in the country at present, obviously they are, given the fact they've won so much, that Kerry will always up their game when they play against the Dubs, in the same way that Dublin have always tried to up their game, you know, historically when they do go out and play against Kerry. And I think that'll be no different come Saturday evening in Tralee. I think you have to take everything a Kerry man says or writes with a pinch of salt, and there's a good bit of humour there from Billy. I haven't met him before, but I'd love to sit down and have a beer with him. Because
you liked the last bit, didn't you, Jerry? Wasn't it?
I liked the last bit, yeah.
You liked the last bit where he says, I'll read the lead into it. The very act of wearing that jersey confers citizenship. Dublin blue is the colour of unity and diversity in these rare old times of the here and now. Dublin, you are worthy All-Ireland champions, and you are so welcome to the kingdom.
Yeah, so that's a spider's web. That's a spider's web trying to catch us out. But yeah. Sure, the Kerry folk have been at that for years, you know.
Yeah,
so yeah, this and yeah, that. But I wouldn't buy too much or look too much into it. But I think it'll be a great evening. And I know the tickets, they've been, you know, it's been documented now, it's been sold out for weeks.
A long time ago. Austin Stacks, you know, down in Tralee, Jerry, I think it holds about 12,000.
Mm, it's a big old stand there, you know.
It's a strange one. Would they not have had it in Killarney, maybe? Mm.
So I don't know why they're not having it in Killarney. Yeah. Maybe they're just moving around to satisfy different club delegates. Who knows what's going on with Kerry's kind of politics there. But
They do seem to be alternating match to match.
Yeah,
all right. Yeah.
No, I think they played, after two home games, I think they played one in Killarney and one in Tralee. So I think they're maybe trying to mix it up.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's great, Ger. And I just must mention, actually, Billy Keane's piece in the Irish Independent, of course.
This is On The Hill, 98FM's Dublin GAA podcast.
Well, Ger, it's been a mixed bag for the kingdom this year. Two losses, two wins. Donegal 1-17, Kerry 2-17. That was the first week of the league campaign. Then they were beaten at home by Mayo 1-10 to 15 points. Beaten at home by Monaghan 1-10 to 2-8. And then beat Roscommon away from home 1-13 to 1-19. So they've won two away, lost two at home. Is there any significance in that, do you think, home and away form?
Well, I guess there is, really, isn't there? There's something maybe in the mindset of the players, maybe when they're travelling away, maybe they're putting more into it from a thought process perspective, that it's, you know, teams, when they are playing away games, there's always that kind of anecdotal belief or experience whereby it's always tougher to win on the road. Mm. So I need to work even harder. Whereas if we're playing at home, well, I'm going to be in my own bed, sure, it'll be grand, you know, extra hour sleep in bed or wherever it is. I don't too far to travel, say. And you mightn't be as switched on or as focused. And, you know, that's really the only thing I can kind of think of there. Like, if you know, that first game away to Donegal, like, sure, it's one end of the country to the other.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ballybuffet is such a tough place to go and win.
Yeah, as Dublin found out.
Yeah. And, you know, we saw the state of the pitch against Dublin. Even on a good day, that Ballybuffet pitch, again, from my own experience, it's quite a heavy pitch to play on, and it does, you know, drain the energy from your legs. So to get a win down there, I'd say, Fitzmaurice, obviously, he would have been delighted, you know, to start off so well.
Would you say then that's even maybe a warning sign to the Dublin setup that You know, don't take this Kerry team too lightly, despite the fact they've been beaten twice at home. That Donegal result was very impressive.
Yeah, well, the Dublin players won't buy into the fact that, you know, they've lost two games at home. Like, that really won't come into the reckoning. Mm. What will come into the reckoning really will be Kerry are arch rivals. That will be a part of the, you know, motivating. It'll be a motivating factor going down there playing against Kerry, but primarily Dublin will be looking to again improve on the last game against Mayo, and they'll have a look at Kerry's clips, the good, the bad, the ugly, and they'll seek to kind of expose some areas or some weaknesses within the Kerry team. So I can't see them getting totally carried away with the fact that they're going to be travelling down to Tralee.
But
you'd imagine though, Kerry, if I was a Kerry player, having lost two games at home and knowing how much Kerry folk love their football, you know, they won the All-Ireland, I think, 2014. And, 2014.
Yeah, 2014, yeah.
They won the All-Ireland. So there might be a sense that it's a famine down there, and the fact that they haven't bet Dublin.
Yeah.
In so many games since, I think it was in March of that 2015.
You
know, they'd be looking to kind of compete with them and to do something there. So I would expect the Kerry guys to come out of the traps very, very strong, very early, you know.
And the fact that you mentioned motivation there, Ger, you know, everybody knows about this unbeaten record now. It'll match the 34 game run that Kerry achieved between 1929 and 1932. Is that something else as well? Like, and I know as sports people nowadays, you try not to use negative things to motivate yourself, but stopping Dublin from matching that Kerry record must be something else that the Kerry players will really want to do as well.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with you there. That will, you know, it's been published or it's been promoted over the last couple of weeks and months now in terms of, you know, Dublin's unbeaten run. And who's going to stop them? When is it going to come to an end? And I think it's set up lovely from a media point of view to have, you know, the two stalwarts of Gaelic football to be competing against each other. You know, one team are trying to match the record, the other team are trying to keep the record of their forefathers, you know, going back to 1932.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is a nice image or symbolism there. You know, imagery kind of pops into your head in terms of some of those great players going back. But again, it's become quite clinical in the modern era, and it is a professional mindset that these amateur players do have in terms of their preparation. So, you know, will they reflect on it or will they think about it very briefly? But you know, they won't get totally caught up in it. Like,
you know? If you're Eamon Fitzmaurice now, the manager of Kerry, what are you saying to your players this week about that record? Forget about it.
See, well, I don't know is the answer, because I've only shook his hands on occasion, so I don't know his mindset. But look, he's an All Ireland winner, and
But even if you're a manager, even yourself, Ger, and you're coming into this, if you're managing this Kerry team yourself, would you say, lads, forget about this?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, what you'd be saying is, look, lads, this is obviously out there in terms of this record that, you know, Dublin are coming down. They're looking to kind of, you know, match our record going back 1932. You know, I don't want us to get distracted by it, but it's just something just to have in the back of your minds when you take the field on Saturday evening, that you know, they're coming here to come down to our turf, to come and to put their own names in the history books. So you know, if that doesn't motivate you, I don't know what does.
Yeah.
And then that's it, dealt with very, very quickly, and then you go back onto the more analytical side of things.
You mentioned about weaknesses there a moment ago, Ger, and something that's been noticed with Kerry in their opening games is they've been fading towards the end of matches. You know, they came back quite late regards to training, and that, I suppose, similar enough to Dublin. Are they putting championship improvement, do you think, over league success? Is Eamon Fitzmaurice more concerned about getting the team right for the championship? Obviously, he doesn't want to get the team relegated, but is this maybe why they're fading, is that they're just not peaking yet, that he wants that to happen later in the year?
I wouldn't know the exact answer, but, you know, there's a couple of different maybe reasons there as to why they're fading. You know, one could be they could be doing heavy training potentially at the moment, and you know, trying to get the heavy load in nice and early in the season, and maybe taper off and they come into the Munster Championship. I would say that's probably not the reason why, given how scientific the game has become, and it's more about, particularly at the top level, just maintaining, you know, a somewhat constant level of fitness. And you know, your peaks and troughs shouldn't be as big as they used to be going back when you come, you know, after the Christmas break and the Christmas pudding, where you go into a million miles an hour training and lads picking up injuries after 2, 3, 4 training sessions, you know. Yeah. It's kind of more scientific and balanced now. So why are they fatigued, and maybe the bit of fitness coming back a bit later? I'd say maybe, you know, that would influence how you would finish out some of these games. If you look at his selection over the 4 games, he is trying an awful lot of new players as well. A lot of young guys coming in, getting runs. There's 2 Tom O'Sullivans there, kind of cornerback and wingback. One is Tom Leo. Jack Savage playing corner forward and wing forward as well. Jack Barry, who's in UCD. So a lot of these lads, they're getting game time for the first time. And I suppose it is a big step up from the success a lot of those players would have had at minor. You know, they've won 3 minor All-Irelands in a row, and they're fairly successful young players coming through. So it can take a bit of time for those lads to get used to the pace of the senior and the county scene, because it is a different level from the it is a step up from the club scene, you know, and from the under-21 and from the minor grades. So maybe it's just taking a couple of games for those guys to get up to speed, you know.
Do you think they will those younger players you mentioned, and we've been hearing good reports from some of them, will they get a run out against Dublin, or will Eamon be a little bit more cautious maybe with his team selection this weekend?
Well, if he's by cautious, if he plays guys who have lost to Dublin over the last few years, well then, is he just trying the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result? That's a question you'd have to ask. If I was in his shoes, I'd be seeing how these new guys get on against the best. And Dublin, again, as Billy Key mentioned, you know, we are worthy, I suppose, All-Ireland winners and league contenders, just given the success over the last number of seasons with Jim Gavin's squad. So he needs to see how these players will react when they're, facing the top players in the country, and whether he can trust those players then when it comes to the championship and the heat of the battle, you know. So I would suspect a lot of these young guys will start on Saturday.
One man who is back, and whether you're wearing colours of blue and navy or green and gold, we all appreciate a good Gaelic footballer, and James O'Donoghue has been a marvellous player for Kerry over the years. He had a bit of a bad injury over that kept him out for the last while, a shoulder injury. I remember speaking ahead of the league game last year at Croker to one of the local Kerry media guys, and he was even saying at the time they were worried James O'Donoghue mightn't even play again because the injury was that bad. But look, it's brilliant to see him back. He's playing again. He's taking the frees for Kerry. It's a big boost for them, isn't it, getting such a quality player back this year?
Well, I tell you, it is a big boost, right? And just before we talk with James, I think you have to look at how well Paul Geaney has been doing as well.
Okay.
In the absence of James O'Donoghue, I think he's really stepped up to the mark in Championship and even in the 4 league outings so far. He scored 2-4 against Donegal, Paul Geaney, 2 against Mayo, 3 against Monaghan, and then he scored 1-6 against Roscommon. So he's really stepping up to the mark. Now, when you throw in a player like James O'Donoghue and he scored 3 from play against Roscommon last week and 1-3, he's gonna be buzzing coming into this this Dublin challenge, because again, having been out for so long, between the shoulder injury and that, his legs will actually feel quite fresh, I would imagine. I'd say he's just enjoying his football. And if you've watched his performances to date now, I know he came on maybe in the earlier game against Donegal, but he's done well since then. But he just seems to be buzzing. He seems to be a bundle of energy, and he does add a different dynamic to the Kerry attack. And what do I mean by that? I mean he's somebody who needs to be watched. He's somebody who will, you know, he will play inside off Paul Geaney, but he'll also come out as well and try and pick up play if Dublin have a packed defence there. And he is a guy to kind of take on his immediate opponent and try to create an overlap, and he'll give and go. Again, he is quite an elusive runner as well. By that, what I mean is you think you kind of have him bottled up, and all of a sudden it'll jink and then he's off again. What I would say is I think he is quite one-sided, funny enough, now, for such a talented guy. But I think if he could kind of develop more on his weaker side, I think he would cause even more of a problem for any defence.
if you had to put a Dublin defender on them this weekend, is there anybody? I know it's a dangerous game to play, maybe because your defender then getting dragged around the place, and your shape is disturbed then. But if you were going to put somebody on him,
I'd probably put between himself and Paul Geaney. I'd be looking at Philly McMahon and Michael Fitzsimons. I think both lads would do a good job.
Yeah, makes a fantastic man marker, isn't
he? Yeah, he's really come on. And Geaney does tend to play more inside. He kind of holds the length of that Kerry attack. So I can see Philly kind of coming out a bit with James O'Donoghue, and then making O'Donoghue think about him as well if he does get on the ball and drive forward like Philly likes to do. Obviously scoring 2 points last week as well. So, yeah, they'd be interesting matchups. O'Donoghue, again, he is somebody who needs watching. And particularly, like I said, you think you kind of have him, and because of his trickery and his pace and his dynamism, he's able to kind of get away, and he's able to kind of create these overlaps and kind of wrap arounds and draw frees as well.
They have been butchering goal chances as well, Kerry. They've been getting chances inside. You know, we saw in the Donegal game that Dublin can be vulnerable maybe if they're not ready for it. So I know even though Kerry have been maybe butchering chances, the fact is they're getting chances, and they might get a couple now this Saturday, won't they?
Ah, they will get a couple. Every team is going to get a couple. And the players that Kerry have on side, and there seems to be a clear directive from the Kerry games I've seen so far this season, that Fitzmaurice does seem to be telling them to have a go. If the goal is on, if you're 1-on-1 or for 2v2, just have a go, try to create that goal opportunity. And the positives for Kerry from that is that they are creating these opportunities. They're not nailing them just yet, but you know, one or two goes in, players begin to grow in confidence, and then you know that just impacts on the whole forward line. And again, the more the opportunities come, the more shots they get in. You know, they are quite a potent attack. Kerry always know, you just can't take your eye off any of these guys whatsoever. But I think Fitzmaurice will be very content with the chances that they are creating, although not quite putting them all away just yet.
I suppose just to finish before we maybe just get your assessment of how the game might go, but midfield, just the way Dublin have been performing, you'd be confident enough they might dominate that area of the park, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would be. I think David Moore and Mick McCauley and Brian Fenton, you know, between the three of them, they've had very good battles over the years. Now Anthony Marsh coming back to fitness as well. I think groin surgery last year, but he seems to be kind of finding his feet as well. So it'll be interesting battles in the midfield area this particular weekend. At the moment, I think Dublin have the upper hand. I think the two lads are more mobile. I think David Moran, for such a big guy, he is deceptively quick, and he's quite agile as well for a guy of his size. But I think at the moment, Brian will mark him, or Mick McCauley will mark him. I would fancy our lads to have the upper hand on Saturday evening.
And we can't go, Ger, without mentioning the fact that Bernard Brogan might be back this weekend. Now, Bernard, the last game he featured for Dublin, of course, was the All-Ireland Final replay, and we all know he was dropped for that one. I know if I was Bernard Brogan, and that was the last game, or was the last bit of, obviously winning was made up for it all, but he also got married over the Christmas period. I'd say he's dying to get stuck into a good game of Gaelic football this weekend, would you?
Ah, of course he would be. Look, all any player wants to do is play games, and you know, there's no bigger game than playing against Kerry. And to play them in their backyards with the possibility of matching the Kerry record of unbeaten runs, 34, I think is a great motivator for any of the guys going down. For Burns, he'll have his own personal targets.
Will he feel he has something to prove, do you think, this year?
Ah, he will, yeah. Well, he wouldn't be around if he didn't. Like, you know, if he felt he was kind of content with his lot, or if he was of a mind set whereby, I should be just back in the team anyway based on what I did in the past, well then he wouldn't last. But that's not the type of person he is. He'd be looking to kind of improve with each season as it passes. And you know, with the disappointment of not kind of starting the All-Ireland Final and replay, and again, like you mentioned, this being his possible first outing, you know, whether he starts or comes in, more than likely to come in, you know, he'd be certainly looking forward to, you know.
How do you think it's going to go, Ger? I don't usually get a prediction off you, but it's such a special big game. Do you think Dublin are going to win it?
I say Dublin are going to win. Well then, I think just when you look at how Kerry have I'm not too bothered about their home record, really, that, you know, this season losing two. But I think when you look at their performances today, where they have kind of fatigued towards the end of the games, and also when you look at, you know, Dublin just have had the upper hand over this particular crop of Kerry players for a good while now, and you kind of mentioned at the outset of the show in terms of how many victories we've had over them on big occasions. And again, you look at last year's two league games and the All-Ireland semi-final, you know, when push comes to shove and, you know, the game is in the melting pot and there's only 10 minutes to go, I think some of the Kerry guys may begin to doubt themselves. And I think Dublin have the bit of fitness just at the moment. You know, I think they have the extra bit of legs, a bit of gas in the tank. So I would go with Dublin towards the end, but I think it'll be quite a tasty affair. I think it'll be a lot of lads getting to know each other, renewing old relationships or acquaintances. And so, yeah, I'm kind of really looking forward to seeing this game.
This is On The Hill, 98FM's Dublin GAA podcast.
On this week's Dope Club Focus, there's only one club we could shine a light on, Coola. The Coola Hurlers are gearing up for the biggest ever day in the club's history. They're the first club from Dublin to play in an All-Ireland final. They, of course, take on Ballyea from Clare at Croke Park on St. Patrick's Day. And that game throws in at 3pm. Ahead of the match, our hurling reporter Derek Ryan spoke to the club's youth coach, Ken Fitzgerald, out in Dalkey, and he explained the magnitude of the game.
Well, it's huge. It's unbelievable. We people coming from all over the place to come to the match, see the match. All the children are mad for it. They want to play. They want to play hurling. They want to be cooler. They want to wear red in the school. And they want. So it's a huge big deal, and it's a day we never thought we'd see coming, to be honest.
You hadn't won the Dublin Championship between 1994 and 2015, 2 years ago. You've now won two Dublin Championships in a row, a Leinster title under your belt as well, and you are hoping to get to win an All-Ireland final this week. How did you manage to do that? What's gone in behind the scenes over the last 20, 25 years here at the club to put you in a position where you can now win an All-Ireland title?
The late 80s, early 90s, we put a juvenile committee together. It was the first juvenile committee we'd had, and the idea was to try and focus energies on getting players playing. Players from Ballybrack, Sallynoggan, who'd strongly... We never really had a big presence in Ballybrack, but Sallynoggan was very strong. A lot of kids there went to school in Dunleary and were picked up that way. And so the idea is to push over into Shankill and try and get players playing and try and grow teams. Now, it worked and it didn't work. We were still putting teams together, even as late as we were winning championships in 91, 2, or 89, 91, 94. And we were still putting two and three teams together to make fail of teams. So around about that time, we kind of started getting people, more and more people involved. The whole concept of the nursery kicked off. And again, Damien Bourne, Coleman O'Driscoll would have driven that at that time. Coleman was a teacher, young teacher, and very enthusiastic about hurling. And Damien, like every child who ever played hurling, myself included, would have his thumbprints on them, you know. And it grew from that. And the idea being that we'd get the parents to coach the kids, we'd guide the parents, and it's grown into what you see today. And it's evolved really into what... There was no sea change. It just evolved into what we have today.
Something like that takes a lot of patience, and I'm guessing, was there a period in that 21 years between 94 and 2015 that you might be thought this isn't going the way we wanted to go?
Well, we knew what we wanted, and the idea was to try and first of all, we had to retain players, and we had to make sure we bridged the gap into minor, and we did that, and we make sure we had second minor teams for the late bloomers. But then in 2007 we won the minor football championship, and the core of that team won the minor football and hurling, or sorry, the under 21 hurling and football championships in 2009, and the kind of 2006 we won the under 16 championship. Now your John Shannon's, David Tracy's, Usheen's, Owen Brannock, who's playing with the senior footballers and the intermediate hurlers, these guys were all on that team. Niall Carty, Mike Fitzsimons, so these guys were all in that group. And they came through, and they're the core of our senior football and hurling teams now. And so as a result, we've a good, strong core now, and it's really just a matter of producing one or two really good fellas every year now, you know. And we kind of flattered to deceive for many years. We'd lots of good players on paper, but, you know, I won't say we got our act together. It was just getting the chemistry right, I think, you know. Matty has done a lot of work with that, as he said to me when they came in. they're all very good players. Getting them played together might be a different story, and so they're playing very well together, and they all know what they want. And we've the addition, and everyone talks about Con, but Jake and Con are both 96s. So there's 97s waiting in the wings to come on. You know, there's 95s. Keane and Cullum are 94s. Sean and two Seans are 95s. So John Moran then came in a different route. He came out of minor and started playing with the junior teams and worked his way up through the junior teams. A lot of those lads would have went straight into senior teams. But it just all crystallised very well. And a few older lads have helped him along, you know, the way.
So I suppose Matty kind of, you're saying he kind of nearly put the finishing touches on what was already there coming through. A lot of talent, a lot of great, very good young players at the club, and he's sort of put the finishing touches in terms of winning championships.
Well, he got them working together, and he got a system. I hate using the word system when it comes to hurling, but he got them playing a way that suited them, and he certainly his own work ethic rubbed off on them. You know, he's a very, very strong work ethic, and the boys have developed that as well. But having the county lads is hugely important. They're away with the county, and whenever they come back, the intensity rises. And as a result, if you look at our intermediates, beating the championship semi-final, a very, very young team, a lot of kids only out of minor on that, but some good solid fellas who play senior football, playing in central positions on that team, not being pushed to go and play senior hurling and football together. They would be happy to play on the second team, happy to play hurling with their mates, but they were giving us a good spine for that team. And so the rising tide is lifting all the boats, but Matty has raised the work ethic completely there. So when the lads come back from the county, they bring a huge burst of intensity, because there are so many of them gone with the county. When they come back, they bring this huge burst of intensity that rises things, you know. And so and that stays then when they have to go back to county teams.
Also ahead of the big one for Coola, 98FM Sports' Darren Cleary caught up with Dublin defender and Coola clubman Keane O'Callaghan, and he's no stranger to GAA HQ.
Well, I suppose we've been in Croke Park many, many times. We're here doing a quick practice session on Sunday morning. So I suppose it began to feel real then, but we said from the start we can only focus on the next training, and there's no point getting caught up in what's around the corner in 14 or 15 days.
Could you have imagined, though, at the start of this season that you could make it to this point with Coola? I mean, it was probably unthinkable. A Dublin club have never been to this stage. Was it anywhere in the back of your mind at that time?
No, definitely not. I didn't for one second think about the club All-Ireland. And I suppose that's been the way that I've operated as a player for the past few years, and the way the Coola team have operated as well. We just don't think that far ahead. I suppose, though, as a young lad, it's always your dream. I remember coming into Croke Park, Paddy's Day, and watching Ben and Gerry O'Connor win a championship with Cork, or the All-Ireland final, Newtown Chandrum. And, you know, they were my idols Cork from a legends, hurling perspective. Cork legends, yeah. They're my idols growing up, so I suppose that was the dream back then, but never would have thought that that it was a realistic proposal.
Yeah, it's an incredible occasion, as you know, and, you know, the flags in Dalkey, the excitement of your fans, your friends, your family, everyone. You guys can't enjoy the build-up in the same way. You've got a very, very important job to do. How do you approach this game like it's any other game when it is... Absolutely not. It's the biggest game in club hurling.
Well, I suppose the way we've operated all year is that we focus on the next match. So based on that, our next match just happens to be the All-Ireland final. But really, it could be any match. It doesn't really matter that it's the All-Ireland final. Yes, there's going to be a lot of excitement, a lot of build-up. There's going to be more nerves. But you can only really control what you can control. That's what we kind of like doing as a team, what we've tried to do all year. I suppose the families have given us a bit of space there as well. They're not kind of hassling us.
They ask about the game every 5 minutes.
They're not, thankfully, yeah, which is probably, you know, it's a bit of a blessing.
That's where you get dogged, isn't it? That's where you get, you know, it can build up and push down on you when everyone wants to talk about it every 5 seconds. Then you can't escape it. You're thinking about it every minute. And something like that, it starts to make you anxious. So how important is it to just try not think about the All-Ireland Club Hurling Final at this point in time?
Well, I suppose if you start trying to not think, then you're probably going to overthink. I suppose it's just really about trying to improve yourself on a daily basis. So if you need to go to the gym, then go to the gym. If you need to go to the hurling wall, go to the hurling wall. If you need to take a rest, go and take a rest day. And I suppose that gives you a bit of control over your, I suppose, mentality and your physicality as well.
I mean, mindset, mindfulness, visualization, they're all hidden tools that GAA players have in their arsenal at the moment. You all use them. How many times in the last week have you pictured yourself climbing the steps of the Hogan Stand?
Not once.
Not once?
Not once, no.
Really, why?
No. I suppose I don't like to overthink things. If I start thinking about that, then I'm moving away from what's important and what I can control right now. So as I say, if I need a rest, take a rest. If I need to go to the hurling wall to put my mind at ease, go to the hurling wall.
So you're visualising the first catch, the first puck, the first pass?
Yep, that's it, yeah.
That's where you go. You guys have been kind of portrayed as pantomime villains in the fallout of the semi-final because everyone wanted two Schlock-Neil teams in the final. It was this beautiful, glorious dream. In fairness, though, that kind of discounts the fact that this is a real dream for you guys as well.
Yeah, I suppose this is our dream. And it has been our dream for the last 2 weeks. And we really want to bring performance that, I suppose we want to bring a performance that kind of shows the hard work that we've put in the past few weeks. And we kind of want to bring that intensity. You know, there's no point doing really good training all year, training really well, coming up to a match and then being completely flat. So we're trying to really focus on bringing a huge intensity in 2 weeks' time.
That determination, that intensity, did we get shades of that in the first half in particular of that semi-final clash?
I think you can't really compare the two matches. One's in the past, one's in the future. And as I say, Ballier are the strongest team we've played all year. There's no doubt about that. And we've complete focus on that next match, complete focus on our task, and I suppose trying to go toe-to-toe with Ballier and then seeing what they're made of, seeing what we're made of as well.
Watching them in terms of dangers, threats, have you had a good look at the tape? What do you make of them?
Well, I suppose I've seen them all year on TNG and they've been very impressive. Thurles Sarsfields in the semi-final of the Munster, they came from the brink of death to kind of, I think they brought that to extra time, went on and won it, and they're hugely impressive that day. I suppose the main thing that stands out is how hard they work for each other from 1 to 15. They really are a team. Obviously, they have a few big names, but every team has a few big names. But from our perspective, the main thing is how hard they work for each other. You can see that they all, it means a lot to them, but as you say, it means a lot to us as well.
In terms of Dublin hurling overall, how big of a breakthrough is it to have a team in an All-Ireland hurling final for the county scene and overall the scene in Dublin hurling?
Look, I suppose Dublin hurling is coming. It's building. I think there's no doubt about that. Anyone who looks in at it can see that. The work being done at underage is savage. And I suppose getting to All-Ireland final days is what Dublin hurling needs. And whether that be at school level, at minor level, at under 21 level, at club level, really it doesn't really matter what level it is, but Dublin needs teams playing on the biggest day of the year and at the highest level, and I suppose it's huge for Dublin.
This is On The Hill, 98FM's Dublin GAA podcast.
Great stuff from Ken and Keen there. I'll be out there myself, really looking forward to it. Thanks a million to Darren Cleary and to Derek Ryan for their contributions. And of course, Ger Brennan. If you get a chance, do check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/98FM Sport. Derek has a brilliant video there building up to the All-Ireland Club Final. There's so much Gaelic Games action to look forward to this weekend. Enjoy it if you're off to any of the matches. And of course, if you want to contact us here, email onthehill@98fm.com. And the very best of luck to Coola and the boys in blue. We'll chat to you next week.
On the Hill, 98FM's Dublin GAA podcast.